Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, it's not every day that America's top commander in Afghanistan answers reporters' questions, and it's not every day that he's asked if Vice President Biden's more scaled-back approach to the war would work. Would it work, General?
The short, glib answer is no. And the first reason is I believe you have to navigate from where you are, not from where you wish you were. We are in Afghanistan. We've established relationships, expectations, both with the Afghan people, the Afghan government.
So President Obama has a tough choice to make. Escalate the war to a full-blown counterinsurgency strategy with tens of thousands more troops plus massive involvement with the local populations, or a counterterrorism strategy, that's the Biden approach, just trying to mostly bomb al-Qaeda bases, which are our main concern from a U.S. national security and anti-terrorism standpoint. So then the politics enter into it, too. Did McChrystal speak out of turn? Why doesn't the president speak to him more often? Is the president now walking away from his own Afghanistan strategy and years of criticism of the Bush administration for not doing more in Afghanistan? We will get two views, and we will take your phone calls. Our two guests are Peter Bergen, CNN's national security and terrorism expert and author of books including Holy War, Inc., and Leslie Gelb, president emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, also a former New York Times foreign affairs columnist. He was Thomas Friedman before Thomas Friedman, and author of books including Power Rules, How Common Sense Can Rescue American Foreign Policy. Leslie Gelb and Peter Bergen, welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Good morning.
And listeners, our phones are open. What should we do in Afghanistan? This debate is coming to a head in Washington right now. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. And Leslie Gelb, what is this McChrystal quote from, or I should say, why is this McChrystal quote from London generating so much heat? Did he speak out of turn in some way, disagreeing with the vice president in public, or what?
Well, I know General McChrystal very well, admire him enormously. What he said in London was inappropriate, because the president is going through a strategic review, and he went out and publicly, in effect, lobbied against an alternative and for his alternative. And that's really not done. You got to argue it up the chain of command in these meetings. When he goes out and does it publicly, it's putting enormous and, I think, unfair pressure on the president. And I say unfair because he is coming at it from his military perspective on the ground in Afghanistan. And his strategy is many things, not just military operations.
Peter Bergen, do you agree with that? I mean, this is a big national debate. So much is at stake. Why shouldn't the major players in the public sector have this debate in public so we, the public, can be as informed as possible about what important people like the vice president and like the top commander in the field are thinking?
Well, you know, I always agree with Les Gelb, and I agree again with Les Gelb here. This reminds me a little bit of the Admiral Fallon incident. You may recall Admiral Fallon was the head of CENTCOM, which controls military operations in the Middle East and other parts of Asia. And he went on the record with GQ magazine saying that the likelihood of an attack by the United States on Iran was close to zero. And McChrystal's comments, I think, in London, put him publicly on one side of a policy debate. It's one thing to make these kinds of points in a 66-page document which was leaked, but it's quite another thing to make these comments publicly. It's not appropriate for a military commander to make these kinds of observations.
But do I gather, Peter, that you're more on McChrystal's side of the argument when it comes to what to do in Afghanistan? Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, President Biden's position, which is sort of we should just do counterterrorism, he hasn't really said much publicly about that position. But it, to me, this has a back to the future kind of feel to it. This was basically the approach that President Bush had in Afghanistan in the first years of the American involvement after 9/11 there, and that yielded a resurgent Taliban, which has morphed together ideologically and tactically with al-Qaeda. So I think this more minimalist view, which President Biden seems to have. I think we've already done that. The United States has already done that, and we've seen the results.
Brian, may I respond?
Yes, you're more on the vice president side here, Leslie.
No. You see, this is the odd thing. I agree with Peter in his criticism of what Vice President Biden says. I don't think Biden has a strategy, and I don't see how you just go after al-Qaeda alone. In that respect, I think Peter is spot on. And, in fact, McChrystal is spot on, but should have just said it privately. And what I'm trying to do is offer another alternative, something in between the McChrystal, what I call all-out strategy, 40,000 troops, nation-building, et cetera, and getting out, which is what some Democrats want to do. And I think there is a very strong middle course that people just don't focus on because, as Peter knows, as you know, Brian, we don't like to focus on moderate, commonsensical things. We focus on the extremes.
So go ahead. What's your third way?
Okay. The third way is simply this. There are things we can do in Afghanistan to give the friendly Afghans a head start, like arming and training, including warlords and tribal leaders, and try to, as best we can, to split and weaken the Taliban. And there are things we can do to prepare ourselves to protect our continuing interests against continuing threats from that region by doing stuff that we know how to do very well, namely deter attacks by establishing credible deterrence, credible, strong deterrence, and secondly, contain the threat by establishing allies in the region. We know how to do those things well, and I believe we can do them in Afghanistan, and in the process, do the only thing that gives us a chance of coming out on top, namely making it their war, the Afghan war, rather than our war.
How many additional troops would that take? Because that is the hot-button issue. I realize it's not the only issue, but that's what a lot of this is revolving around. Are we going to send tens of thousands of more Americans into battle in Afghanistan? What would your third-way approach require?
Well, what I say, and as you know, these things are not scientific. In fact, the military recommendation is not scientific. I say send 10,000 more combat troops to handle the immediate problems that General McChrystal describes, plus 5,000 trainers, all of which is intended to give the friendly Afghans a boost over the next 2 or 3 years.
Peter Bergen, everybody agrees that they want to Afghanistanize the war. Is that the right word? Just like we wanted to train Iraqi troops in order to fight that war. And the question was, how quickly could it be done? How many American lives needed to be put at risk in order to do that? And were the goals ultimately worth it in terms of U.S. national security? I guess the exact same questions now apply here. And we were just looking away from these questions over the last few years because we were also focused on Iraq, correct?
Indeed. I mean, and, you know, there's an interesting comparison between Iraq and Afghanistan about the size of the military and police in both countries. You know, Iraq is a smaller country than Afghanistan. It's got a smaller population. It's essentially deserts, which are relatively easy to control. Afghanistan is a larger country with a larger population and topographically is much, much harder to control because of the mountains, et cetera. And yet, you know, the size of the Iraqi army and police is about 600,000 men in uniform versus in Afghanistan only 150,000. So, you know, just do the math. As Les Gelb says, you know, obviously we need to train up a much larger Afghan army. But that is not something, A, that will happen overnight, and B, so far the Afghan army hasn't really shown up to do any serious fighting. I mean, one of the complaints about that the Marines had down in Helmand, where I was recently, was, you know, how few Afghan soldiers actually participated in the fight there. So, you know, this is a long-term project.
Lester in Riverside, you're on WNYC. Lester, thank you for calling in.
Right, thank you. I just like to say that fighting what's essentially a terrorist conspiracy with traditional military methods is equivalent to, you know, going after a fly with a machine gun.
What's the fly?
The fly is al-Qaeda. And should we actually subdue Afghanistan, they'll pop up someplace else. It's essentially a police problem rather than a military problem.
Lester, I think you raise a central question here, and I think that's part of the vice president's point. Peter Bergen, with your reputation as a terrorism expert, why not look at it that way? This war was begun after 9/11 to go get Osama bin Laden or go get those bases so they couldn't use Afghanistan as a staging ground for more 9/11s. Well, there haven't been any more 9/11s, and those plots that have been uncovered, including the one recently, very much involving my hometown here, New York City, you know, the staging ground is the United States. People are doing it here. People aren't doing it in caves in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Well, I mean, I disagree with a number of those points. First of all, al-Qaeda declared war on the United States over 10 years ago. In fact, the first time they did that to a Western audience was in an interview with CNN that I produced in 97. They then conducted warlike activities like blowing up American embassies and blowing up American warships and killing 3,000 American civilians. These are not the acts of a typical criminal organization. So certainly they're at war with us. I mean, we can pretend that, you know, that that's not the case. But
and they're at war with the Western world. And I don't want to minimize, you know, Bali and Madrid and London and all of that, which has roots in al-Qaeda, obviously.
Yeah, so it's neither a police action nor is it World War IV, as some people have claimed. It's something in between, and we don't really have the exact language to explain it. The president has come up with the best, I think, formulation, much better than the war on terror, which is to say that we're at war with al-Qaeda and its allies. And if people choose not to be allied with al-Qaeda, then, you know, we're no longer at war with them. So there is a military aspect to this, and, of course, there's many other aspects of this. This is not an either-or type thing.
But Leslie Gelb, front page article in the Wall Street Journal today, I don't know if you've seen it yet, al-Qaeda's diminished role stirs Afghan troop debate. And it's all about how military officials say they have severely constrained al-Qaeda's ability to operate in Afghanistan and Pakistan with the drone attacks and things like that. And they are not what they once were, and that needs to be taken into account in this debate as to how much of a massive military strategy with how many American bodies and how much we go into this very, very difficult game of trying to secure every Afghan town and village against the Taliban when the Taliban aren't even al-Qaeda anyway.
Yeah, I don't know whether this story is right. You know, clearly, if you look just at Afghanistan, al-Qaeda is playing much, much less of a role than it did when the Taliban was in power. How strong they remain in Pakistan is a question that our intelligence experts argue about a lot without much evidence. I'm a believer, though, in testing the waters through putting proposals on the table, through putting money on the table to see if we can split these people up. But in any event, getting back to what your caller was asking, I think it is absolutely true that we can't put all our resources in the AFPAC, Afghanistan-Pakistan basket in combating al-Qaeda, because al-Qaeda can strike us right now from a dozen different places, including Denver.
Leslie Gelb, former president of the Council on Foreign Relations. Peter Bergen, CNN's national security and terrorism expert, as we talk about the debate within the Obama administration over whether to escalate the war in Afghanistan. Our lines are full at 212-433-WNYC. You can also comment on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Good conversation breaking out there. Tim in Woodbridge, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
A couple of different points. I've served twice in Afghanistan and once in Iraq, and the situation in Afghanistan is much different than it was in Iraq. However, if the experts, the General McChrystal, the Admiral Mullins, if the Secretary of Defense, if they're the ones that are saying we need more troops, it is a scientific decision on their part. They will not ask for more troops to be brought into harm's way in a very loose-hearted way. They take it very seriously. They would not risk troops if they felt they didn't have to. So for someone to say that it's not a scientific decision, it is a scientific decision, and is one that these professionals take very seriously.
But Tim,
so they would not be asking the president. And for the vice president to stick his nose into this argument, I find just disgusting, because he is not the expert. The president has a body of people that he relies on to get this information. He has gotten that information from these experts, and now it's the president, the leader, the commander-in-chief, who now has to make that ultimate decision. Vice president's business to be sticking his nose into this matter.
Tim, let me jump in. And first of all, thank you for your service to our country, for serving in both those fronts. That's an incredible sacrifice to make, to be in one of those places, no less both of them. But let me play you a clip and ask you to stay on the line, because there doesn't seem to be consensus among the generals. There's General McChrystal. We know his position now. Here on CBS Face the Nation yesterday is National Security Advisor General Jim Jones, asked about McChrystal's statement about the Biden plan.
I think it would be a mistake to underestimate the importance of other elements of the strategy that were decided on in March. We do have a strategy. What General McChrystal has done is presented his opinion, of what he thinks his role within that strategy is. Our strategy is a regional strategy. We focus on Afghanistan and also Pakistan.
So, Tim, maybe it's not as much of a simple scientific calculation as it is a complicated matter of, you know, different observations by different people in the military chain. That's General Jones, and he seems to see it differently. So can we just say, well, McChrystal says it, so it must be so?
Well, here it is, Brian. The military is a very organized group, and there is a very distinct chain of command. When Admiral Mullen, who is the Joint Chief of Staff, okay, is the head military guy, if he says we need more troops, which he has, if McChrystal says we need more troops, and he is the commander in theater, if General Petraeus says we need more troops, then I think that overrides any general who's sitting on the national security. There is a very organized chain of command, and the chain of command that is closest to the president, who are his direct advisors, are telling him that they need more troops, and they do not, again, take this decision half-heartedly. They do not want to jeopardize or risk military lives any more than anyone else.
Obviously, and Tim, thank you for your call. Now, Leslie Galb, I want to take one piece of that and ask you about it, because he talks about a chain of command. We have, by no accident, civilian rule over the military in this country. That's embedded in the U.S. Constitution. And many Americans would find it a scary thing, though Tim is coming from a very sincere and earnest place. Many Americans would find it a scary thing to think that the generals in the field should have the last say rather than the vice president and the president of the United States.
Yeah, this is a very important question. And I don't know anybody who knows anything who says that these recommendations are being made by the military lightheartedly or not seriously or not with the interest of the country and the troops in mind. That isn't the argument at all. And I would disagree strongly with anyone who put it that way. But the military is not infallible. They've made plenty of mistakes, and they're making plenty of mistakes in the field right now in Afghanistan. And secondly, they disagree among themselves. It wasn't just General Jones. You have the Army Chief of Staff, Casey, questioning the troop levels. And then finally, I'm not arguing against more troops. It's how many more troops and for what end, and are we just going to fight an open-ended war there until we feel we've triumphed? And I think that is far too costly, uncertain, and a losing proposition. But it's got nothing to do with the military making these things, these recommendations, lightheartedly.
Peter Bergen, do you want to comment on the Wall Street Journal front page article today about al-Qaeda's diminishing role in Afghanistan? At least a casual reading of that article would lead one to conclude that the more minimalist strategy with the aerial drones and not so many troops on the ground is working.
Well, the drones are certainly, you know, being highly interruptive to al-Qaeda and killed about half of the leadership in the tribal regions. But, you know, the obituary of al-Qaeda has been written a number of times before, and this is not a group that is easily deterrable. It's not a sort of conventional criminal organization. You know, they believe they have God on their side. They're very patient. They can absorb tremendous amounts of a tremendous number of blows. I just think that, you know, we're also, you know, the other thing is, you know, people have relied on air power and always thought that air power always works. But at the end of the day, you know, that it's never really sufficient. So, you know, I think if we draw down in Afghanistan or sort of make the mission more narrow, we've already tried that. We basically tried three approaches in Afghanistan, and two of them have been found wanting. We closed our embassy there in 1989 and zeroed out aid. And we got the Taliban and then al-Qaeda. In 2001, we did the whole thing on the cheap because of the ideological aversion to nation building by the Bush administration. And we got the Taliban resurgent and al-Qaeda, which may not be large in number. It never has been, but is very influential on the Taliban, both ideologically and tactically. And now, you know, the Obama administration has come up with a somewhat serious plan, given the constraints of resources that exist. And I think it just needs some time to make it, you know, for it to work. This is not, there is a model for a successful Afghan state. It's not Belgium, but it's Afghanistan in the 1970s, yes, which was a country at peace, you know, internally and doing relatively well.
But that's the point that we're at now, isn't it? The president deciding whether to walk away from his own plan as it was released in March. The president, in effect, deciding perhaps to walk away from his own rhetoric of the last 5 years, where he said the Bush administration was ignoring the real war, the good war in Afghanistan, for its distraction in Iraq. But now the president may walk away from that position. Is it fair to characterize it that way?
You know, I think it's very hard to make that characterization because we aren't in these meetings. I mean, some of the information is getting out. It seems to be more we're not going to just do something without thinking it through very carefully. And I think it's very hard to say what the president is thinking about this right now.
Leslie, it would be, you know, he's certainly getting criticized from the right for setting himself up for a big flip-flop after 5 years of saying and running for president on the platform plank that the Afghanistan war is the real war. We need to get out of Iraq and put our focus on Afghanistan. And now he's the one who seems to be stepping back from McChrystal, or Biden is, and the president may go with the Biden plan, and saying, look, let's not get any more involved over there. So would that be a major flip-flop, or how would you characterize that?
Well, I do characterize it as a flip-flop, and criticized him in writing several times on just this point, because in March, he said Afghanistan is a central security issue to the United States, and effectively endorsed the counterinsurgency strategy with a big nation-building component. It was kind of an open-ended thing. And then about 4 or 5 weeks ago, he reaffirmed this by going even further and said it was a war of necessity, not a war of choice, and that this war will be fully resourced. And he had his spokesman say it a half a dozen times, fully resourced. And then a week or so after that, it's April Fool. It's we've got to look at strategy again and our commitment and the rest of it. So I find it very hard to follow what he's doing.
Susie in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Susie.
Good morning. I am not a disinterested observer. I have a nephew serving as a Marine officer in Helmand Province right now, and I was horrified by the 8 deaths over the weekend. I have 2 questions. One is, if you minimize the troops, how do you protect the troops that are there? They're already at tremendous risk. They're being hung out in these small areas where they can't defend themselves very well. That's one question. And the other is, what happens to the women whom we have encouraged to go back to school, to run for office, if we let the Taliban come back in? I mean, I don't hear any discussion of what will happen to these women who were hideously mistreated under the Taliban.
Well, Susie, should we be going to war all over the world for women's rights?
I actually was totally against the war. But this is different. We went in there and then told them to go out, go to school, run in elections. It's not like we didn't. I mean, they were. Do I like what happens to women all over the world? No, I think it's absolutely hideous. And I would like to see many, many things done for them outside of going to war. My first feeling about this war when it started was smells like Vietnam. I mean, I hate it, but I want to know what are the, starting from where we are now, not from where we should have been when we started, what should we be doing to protect, one, our troops who are out there, I mean, and two, the women whom we have specifically encouraged to get involved in their country.
And to take risks
by
doing so.
And to take tremendous risks. They have acid thrown in their faces for going to school.
Susie, thank you. And Peter Bergen is the women's rights question, even on General McChrystal's or anyone else's radar screen when it comes to what it will take to declare victory. Can those women feel that the U.S. will stay and protect them, even under the McChrystal scenario?
Well, I mean, if international forces weren't in Afghanistan, the Taliban would take over at least half the country. And you know what that would mean for women. It's not because the Taliban are so strong. It's because the Afghan army and Afghan government are presently so weak. And so I think that we know what the outcome would be if the commitment sort of draws down. On the question of these remote outposts, I think this is a huge story. Over the weekend, 8 American soldiers were killed 20 miles away from a place where 9 American soldiers were killed in a remote outpost almost exactly a year ago. And the Army has done a massive investigation of the event a year ago. There have been 3 separate reports. One is several hundred pages long. And these reports are supposed to be lessons learned. And yet, you know, no lessons seem to be learned. In almost an exact replay, the Taliban attacked a remote combat outpost, overran it, and killed a lot of American soldiers. And you've got to ask yourself, you know, what are people thinking at the Pentagon here when they do these lessons learned exercises and then don't communicate them or change their policies? Mm.
Leslie Gelba, last word. Are we waiting for a yes-no announcement from the president? Is there a formal deliberation taking place right now and he's going to make a speech to the nation or go out before the press corps or something at a defined moment and say, okay, we are going with the McChrystal plan or we are going with the Biden approach or something else?
Well, he's not going to say that is, I'm choosing McChrystal or Biden or whatever, but he will come out and make yet another major policy pronouncement as he did in March. But this time, I hope it hangs together better than the March one, because that didn't make much sense to me, and I hope he will stick by it. And you know, we're all in the position then of having to back him and see how it goes.
By the way, is this a better process than in the Bush administration? The Bush administration got criticized for not allowing different points of view in the deliberations over Iraq. Now people seem to be criticizing the Obama administration for allowing a real discussion among his top advisors.
I don't criticize him for the different points of view. I applaud it. But I don't applaud taking a very strong position saying we're in this all the way because it's a central security interest of the United States, and then saying April Fool. Mm. Presumably, if he had thought about it hard 6 months ago, a lot of the questions that we're asking now would have been raised then. In fact, they were raised then. Let me just mention one other point.
30 seconds,
yeah.
Really.
The lady said, you know, we need to send troops out to protect our troops. The purpose of combat is not to send troops to protect troops. It's for them to do fighting. And if they're in a position where they need protection, they're in the wrong position, as Peter was saying. And the military are not infallible. They're presenting strategy and troop requests as part of an overall strategy. And the president has got to give that his consideration.
And the debate goes on in the White House as well as here. Leslie Gelb, former New York Times foreign affairs columnist, president emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the author of books including Power Rules, How Common Sense Can Rescue American Foreign Policy, and Peter Bergen, CNN's national security expert, and author of books including Holy War, Inc., and The Osama Bin Laden I Know, An Oral History of Al-Qaeda's Leader. Thank you both very much for spending this time on this very important
discussion. Thank you. Good talking to you, Peter.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.